Hey everyone, how you doing? This is Amon Green, Green Bay Packers all-time leading rusher, and you're listening to The Average Cheese, hosted by Dell and Todd, two lifelong Packer fans talking about their favorite team, the 13-time champion, Green Bay Packers. Go Pack, go!
What the hell's going on out here? Everybody's grabbing out there, nobody's touching.
Trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win.
So welcome to episode 134 of the Average Cheese Podcast. It's the whole family for episode 134. Thanks to Rhonda and the folks at R&M Management. Thanks to Dwight at ddgcustoms.com. And thanks to Dan and the folks at Bob Anderson Builders. Folks, if this is the first time you're listening, this is the best part of the show right here, where Peter goes over the number 34 for the Packers for episode 134. Peter, it's the Terdell Middleton
episode. It very nearly was the Terdell Middleton episode, right? So I was caught between either him or Edgar Bennett. Decided that I would go with the guy that we remember well from the 96 Super Bowl. But there is a link between Terdell Middleton and Edgar Bennett, which we'll get to in a moment. So Edgar Bennett was that drafted in the fourth round by the Packers in 1992 at Florida State. And he was more of a fullback at Florida State than he was a running back. I don't remember if you guys remember Amp Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Who played for FSU. So Bennett was, you know, mainly his blocking back in college. Caught a lot of passes, though, coming out of the backfield. And then earned that, you know, the starting role as the Packers running back over a couple of seasons with William Henderson as the fullback. Here comes the link with Terdell Middleton. In 1995, Edgar Bennett rushed for over 1,000 yards, becoming the first Packers back since Terdell Middleton to do that. Middleton did it in 1978, so there were 17 years between those two 1,000-yard rushers. And it's quite difficult to believe, I think, to a degree, that Edgar Bennett was only the fifth 1,000-yard rusher that the Packers had ever had. More of a solid runner, you know, he very rarely averaged 4 yards a carry. In that season where he had 1,000 yards, he averaged 3.4 yards a carry, but gave them that solid feel in the backfield. Excellent receiver. You know, he had consecutive years. In 93, he caught 59 passes, 78 in 94, 61 in 95,
wow,
31 in 96 in that Super Bowl year. So he was one of those really solid players that everybody, you know, all of those really successful teams have. But 96 was his last year playing for the Packers. So he ruptured his Achilles tendon in the preseason in 97. Yeah, never played for the Packers again. Dorsey Levens took over the running back role that year. But Bennett did come back and play 2 years with the Bears before retiring. And then, of course, we saw him back with the Packers as a longtime assistant coach. He was the running backs coach for 6 seasons. He was the wide receivers coach for 4 years. And was the offensive coordinator under Mike McCarthy for 3 years. Good Packers guy, is in the Packers Hall of Fame. And like I say, one of those, to a degree, underrated guys that every successful team has to have. So yeah, Edgar Bennett, number 34.
Is he still coaching in the league?
Yeah, he's with the Raiders. I believe he's the wide receivers coach at the Raiders.
Interesting. Interesting that he was a running back and has been the wide receiver coach.
Yeah.
So on to the slices. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but we have gone viral on the Twitters.
Plural. X's.
Yeah, the X's. I was at the game on Sunday, as you know. It's an older crowd, right? So someone put out there and it took a picture and said, basically, these motherfuckers have been sitting down the whole time. And like someone called security to say that there were people standing up. Put it down in the situation in the picture that it was 3rd and 9, and you can see the scoreboard behind it, and it says 1st and 10. So I just said, it literally says 1st and 10 in your picture. That's all I said. And I'm not shitting on the guy, because I agree with him in the premise that if you're so fucking old that you don't want to stand up for big plays, then stay the fuck home. Go watch it on your couch. I know you waited 87 years for those fucking season tickets. And I'm going to be the same guy, but I'm going to get my crickety old self up when there's a big play. Anyway, that's all I said was it literally says first and 10 in your picture, 35,000 views.
Holy shit.
Not because I said anything intelligent, just because I responded to his picture and caught the mistake. I already apologized to dude because I really agree with the premise that people need to, if you're not going to stand, you cannot complain that people are standing during a game, at least for big plays. Should you stand on first and 10? And I don't know, but I don't know why you're calling security. Anyway, if you're listening to us for the first time because you're like, wow, there's a podcast out there and they're very popular. Welcome.
Yeah.
Peter, I saw the look on your face that you wanted to say something there. Go ahead.
My only issue with it is, right, so I have a problem with fans telling other fans how to fan.
Yes. In which I just did.
And that could be taken in lots of different ways. You know, if people want to stand up for a big play or whatever else, then they can do that. If people want to sit down, because that's the way that they prefer to do it, they can do that too. I struggle with people trying to tell people how to fan. So,
well, I'm like 5'4" and not real wide. If I stand up, you could probably see around me during a play. If you're going to sit down and I stand up in front of you because some dude is making a play, deal
one
with
day,
it.
One day I'll be old, or I'm already old, right? But I'll be even older by the time I make it back to Lambeau, right? I might be that guy that literally can't get out of this seat. So,
but don't you yell at me when I get
that
up.
Hey, I might be that guy now. Never mind about in a few years' time.
I thought it was an innocuous comment other than, if you're going to put something out there,
it was funny.
You should probably have it say 3rd and 9 on the scoreboard behind you.
It was funny. And I'd seen the original tweet. And it wasn't until you retweeted the tweet with that comment that I then went and looked at the photo and said, that's pretty damn good, Dale, that is.
Jamie.
Our breakthrough moment.
That's right. And it really was nothing. But hey, if you're listening for the first time, you just put 5 cents in a jar for Crohn's and Colitis Foundation for listening. So thank you.
Just one more thing. So like there are other stadiums where they don't sit at all the whole fucking game. If you watch that Chiefs game last night, which by the way, there was a lot of empty seats. And granted, it was like the Bears. I think Chiefs fans were just like, yeah, fuck it. We're not going. Philadelphia, those types of stadiums, those fans, they don't ever sit down. They're up the whole fucking game. A lot of those. So, I mean, at Lambeau, it's all bleacher seating. There right. are no seats.
No. Well, there are some. But right, the majority right. of it is bleacher seating. Yeah. By the time I get season tickets, I might be 106 years old, and it's going to be hard to stand.
Whatever. Maybe they'll have some type of technology to help.
Yeah, like one of those chairs that lifts you up.
Yeah. They'll have like a centennial section.
Yeah, I'll be that guy. Anyway, welcome if you're listening for the first time. The Dolphins dropped 70 on the Sean Paytons. Super excited about that.
We were talking before the show. I don't think I've ever seen 70 in an NFL game. 70. I mean, you see that in college. Holy moly.
Further compounded that Sean Payton said that Nathaniel Hackett was one of the worst coaching jobs in NFL history or whatever he said. And then the Dolphins went out and hung 70 on him. I don't know Mike McDaniel, and I don't know what his relationship is with Nathaniel Hackett, but I wonder if, you know, I don't know. What do you think, Peter?
It makes me chuckle for the very reason that you've just described. If you want to make statements like that, then you leave yourself open to some level of ridicule and some level of people having fun at your expense when this type of thing happens.
And I certainly am. So fuck you, Sean Payton. How about that?
1966, the Washington then Redskins put 72 points on the New York Giants, who scored 41 points in that game, 113 points in that game. It's the last time 70 points happened in the NFL.
Payton just comes across as like, he's just so overly conceited.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
And he doesn't need, you don't, I'm not taking anything away from his coaching success and his career, because it's been he's right up there in the conversations with
Yeah, he's a good coach.
Some of the better coaches that have ever coached in this league. But, like, tone it down and just not be such a conceited prick. Yeah. But he can't help it. It's like a, I don't know, a disease.
Speaking of diseases slash injuries, the Packers have more injuries. The big one, and I don't know if Zach Tom is going to play. There's nothing out there as of right now. We're recording on a Monday night that says what Zach Tom is, if he's going to play or not come Thursday. But if you are out your starting left tackle, your starting left guard, and your starting right tackle, at some point, we're going to have some issues. Carrington Valentine's also out, and Devondre Campbell left this game with an ankle injury.
It was the other ankle, by the way.
Not the one that you heard.
Not his, yeah. I don't think he's as much of a loss as Tom. And maybe even Valentine at this point. I mean, considering, I guess they put in Valentine for Valentine.
Yes. And we'll talk about that down the road.
But probably out of the three, I would say Tom is the biggest issue.
Yeah. Three-fifths of your starting linemen are out right now against a really good Lions team. We'll talk about that in a minute.
And Campbell's been a ghost up until this point anyway. He was a ghost in this game too, up until the point that he left. But I don't know that he'll ever come back and be – I wonder if he was just a one-time – had that one resurrection year. You know, then he got hurt and we stuck with him. And then he came back and like, he's never been the same.
No, so. Peter said that last week. I mean, at some point, that's going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Right? If he never improves again. Yeah. He was a one hit wonder. All right. Let's get on to this game. Packers 18, Saints 17.
Jesus.
I can't believe they won that game. Can't believe it.
Well, you go from the week before a game you should have won to the next week to a game you should not have won. What a tale of two different weeks. I mean,
that's the real vagrancies of the NFL, isn't it? And you look at those two games. You look at the Falcons game where the Packers were the better team for three quarters and lost. Mm-hmm. And then you take the complete reverse this week where the Packers were the worst team out of two for three quarters, for three and a half quarters, and won. It's a weird old thing.
Here, let's start with the good, bad, and ugly on offense.
Well, I'd like to just give a shout out to the wide receiver core as a whole. There were some drops, and there were some big drops as well. But for a young group, Dobbs and Reed and Wicks and Samari Toure, for a young group, they came through when they needed to absolutely come through, like others that would talk about Jordan Love, etc. But, you know, I just think as a whole group, I think they're playing at least at the level, but probably above, where we could have expected them to be, with potentially the number one wide receiver, Christian Watson, still out. So, for me, really good for me is that wide receiver call. With, as you can see, still a lot more hopefully to come from them.
I'll add to that and say, not only did they have a good game in this game, but they were going against an elite, elite defensive back. You look at those guys, I mean, the test of all tests was this game for that young wide receiver group. And there were some growing pains in there. They couldn't get open. Those DBs were smothering them. There was a lot of good plays by their defensive backs. And, you know, they kept their heads in the game and found ways to get open, to make plays when they needed to. That's a huge step forward in the growth process of that wide receiver group.
Yeah, I mean, Marshawn Lattimore is a great player.
Who's the dude that was all over the place?
Dante Taylor.
Holy cow, did that guy have a game. He was unstoppable.
Two-fifths of your line. Bakhtiari out, Jenkins out, starting Rashid Humphrey-Walker at left tackle, and your guy Royce Newman was out there. Love did have to run around a bit, but they still only sacked him one time. That was a big surprise. When I saw Rashid Walker get announced first starting offensive lineman, I'm like, it could be a long day with him out there. Rashid Walker was really good in this game.
Kind of an underappreciated guy. And he did make one play where he ran the wrong route on a very important play, a fourth down play. But I thought we saw more of him as an offensive threat, Patrick Taylor. And there was a couple of series there where all of a sudden he was catching pass after pass, swinging out of the backfield and lining up outside. So it wasn't a huge game or anything like that, but I think for him to be a part of the offense, really for the first time contributing 10 yards here, 11 yards there, 5 yards there, We haven't really seen that before. So I thought that was interesting to see. And yeah, he did run the wrong route on that fourth and late in the game. But other than that, it was interesting and encouraging to see him finally begin to show us some of the talent that we know that he has.
That's interesting you say that, because I didn't know that he ran the route and route. At the game, all I saw was, holy fuck, he was wide open.
Yeah.
That was Packer-like defense on that play. That guy was like 7 yards off the football on fourth and three. I was losing it in the stands. I'm like, all Jordan Love had to do was hit him in the chest with that football, and that's a first down. There was a Saints fan in front of me, and he was like, wow. Like, what happened there? Now, we don't get the benefit of looking at it twice, looking at it three times or whatever. I worry for Patrick Taylor that that's what's going to stick in LaFleur's mind, that last play, where that was a big, big mistake in a crucial moment of a game. Because, yeah, he's actually gotten into the office. And that was his role at Memphis, right? He was a pass catcher out of the backfield. He hasn't done that for the Packers. So, yeah, it was nice to see that. And who knows what's going to happen to Jones. So he may get more looks that way.
I thought Love had made some really key decisions when it was time to run. 9 rushes for 39 yards. Doesn't jump off the page, but he made the right decisions when he needed to. And you could see the progression of, you know, he wasn't trying to, like, bulldoze people. He was sliding. Right.
He dove on that one play. I thought he
shows he's coachable, though, right? I mean, LaFleur mentioned it in a couple of his pressers about he doesn't need to be doing that, right? We're like, we need you. Like, he understands that. You know, a lot of those runs were key to keeping some of those drives alive. So
you couple the he's learning to know when to run with he's a smart player. When they're playing man and everybody's got their back to you, just go. Mm-hmm. Because you're athletic enough to do it. That changes the way teams play defense against you if you are wise enough to know when to hit it. That last run was huge.
Oh, yeah.
Jordan Love, I mean, the 50% passing or whatever it was, completion percentage, not great. Yeah.
There's a lot of drops in there.
Oh, yeah. I know we're going to get to this probably in the back, but he threw the most perfect pass to Jaden Reed.
Yeah.
It was perfect. Over his shoulder and the defender across the field, he couldn't have thrown that ball any better. And I'm a big Jaden Reed fanboy. I think he's going to be great. But that was a shit drop on a perfect throw.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the reason that completion percentage doesn't bother me as much as other people seem to be picking it out. There's a number of drops in there. There's clearly a number of called plays where they just want to throw the ball deep, even when the guys are covered. And that to me has to be a lot about, A, we're going to take a shot, but B, is also I want to open up the underneath stuff later in the game, you know, and stop the 8 men in the box trying to stop the running game. Not that you necessarily need 8 men in the box to stop the Packers running game right now, but we'll come to that. But that completion percentage, I think, is a little bit of an overplayed statistic. It's not just about the percentage of passes, it's how deep those passes are. And when you make them, right? It's having the plays when you have to make them that really counts.
Going back to Jaden Reed, you know, how, I mean, he had a lot of nice catches in the beginning of this game. And then there's some dropsies in there, right? So like you just mentioned, my guess is that in a big game like this where, I mean, these DBs were, they weren't fucking around in this game. They were up in the guys' faces. They were getting slammed to the ground after plays on a few of those. I'm not making excuses for them, but on a few of those, there might have been a little bit of hesitancy or tentativeness where he was just like, it started getting into his head. But the best part about it was he persevered past that, right? And then started catching ball. For a young player to just be down, 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 I'm getting my ass kicked out here. What do I do about it? Well, he stepped up when he needed to.
I got into it with someone on Twitter. It's been a big weekend for our Twitter. I said that I think Jaden Reed is the most complete wide receiver or could be in Green Bay. And someone was like, what are you high? He's faster than Dobbs. He's niftier than Watson. Those two guys, those are the two guys, right? He could end up being a more complete player, complete player. He doesn't have a high upside like Watson who can run like the wind, but he's got a higher upside than Dobbs. That was my whole point.
Oh, I think you're spot on. And I think that's why he went higher in the draft, probably around higher than we than we expected because of his completeness. Like you say, he's not a guy that runs a 4.2 40 like Watson that jumps off the page to you, or he doesn't necessarily give you this or give you that. He does lots of things well and will get better and can return punts and can carry the ball on end arounds and reverses and stuff like that. So, yeah, absolutely. Very talented player.
Let's get on to the bad. Ty, we'll start with you.
We were bitching about DeGore. Like, he's so worthless. I just don't even understand how he's out there anymore. I mean, he has an insignificant position on this team. Feel like they could pull anybody off the practice squad and replace him, and it would be an upgrade. He misses so many blocks in the blocking scheme. Him and Runyon, of course, I went to PFF to see exactly how run blocking was, how it went. Runyon and DeGore were at the bottom. And there's a shitload of people in front of them, right? If you played an offensive snap and you were involved in run blocking, then you made the fucking list, right? So there's a couple quarters in there. And there was nowhere to run in this game. Nowhere. It didn't matter what back they threw back there. There was nothing. We beat up on Dylan last week, but I mean, there was nowhere to run in this game at all. I think DeGuara is more of my issue. I don't understand the value that he brings to this team whatsoever.
We got a lot of folks talking to us on Twitter. Sean and Rob from Peter's side of the world have commented. I'm going to put this out there. There's a couple of things. One, Sean's reminded me that Dylan is a big back, right? Like, that's not a reminder, but he said we should probably change the way we call plays when AJ Dylan is in the game. Peter, your thoughts on that? Can you do that? Or does that disrupt the whole flow of the offense if AJ Dylan is RB1 and there's no Jones? Can you play differently with a different running back?
I think the problem you have is that Dylan is that between the tackles runner, preferably an A gap runner, right? And so some of those outside zone plays, some of those wide runs, they're just never going to suit his game. But they also, to be fair, they also don't suit the run blocking that we've seen from the offensive line so far this season. And I've been racking my brains on, and it's only three games, right? And it's a disrupted offensive line with injury and everything else. I think this is the most ineffective Packers running game that we've seen since Michael Haddix led the Packers in rushing with 300 and something yards in 1990, I want to say that was. And that's a long time ago.
That's some obscure shit right there, Peter.
I think you have to be able to... You can't run every play in between the tackles. So you have to be able to run wide because certain plays set up other plays. So you can't. The trouble is the backs that can run wide are Aaron Jones, who's hurt, Emmanuel Wilson, who's hardly played as a rookie. They're running as much now just to set up the pass and to keep the defense honest as they are in any expectation that they're going to pick up 5 or 6 or 7 yards a carry, because they're not picking up 5 or 6 or 7 yards a carry. And maybe it will look different when Aaron Jones is back, just simply because he's got that explosive step, can hit the hole quicker, and he's very decisive, right? And he can run east-west, then cut and run north-south. But right now, I don't know where they're going with this running game, because there's nothing, you don't see anything that encourage, you know, they don't, not even breaking off one run where you say, actually, you know what? There's something to build on there. There's nothing.
I got to read this too. So this comes from Hound from Down Under. This is interesting. And it sort of goes along, Todd, with the whole DeGuara is shit idea. So here goes. Hound says, I'd be desperately trying to talk AJ Dillon into becoming a fullback convert because it'd be hard to see another pathway in the league for him, and it might be mutually beneficial. Any thoughts from either one of you turning Dillon? Not this year. I mean, well, he's going to have to play until Aaron Jones comes back. But what about that?
He's not a better blocker than DeGuara. He isn't. Okay. I mean, you look at his pass blocking PFF scores, he's terrible. So I don't know if, as far as overall athletic, yes, off the charts. It depends on what you're trying to gain by doing that. We know DeGuara is shit. Yeah, we get that. Would it be an upgrade to put Dylan there? In some aspects, yeah. In others, I would have to think that blocking is one of the bigger points. It's not going to be an upgrade.
He has the size, but yeah, I mean, in today's NFL, that fullback is a blocker who's going to catch the occasional pass coming out of the backfield. You know, the ideal guy is the guy at San Francisco, the best in the league, probably. You know, in retrospect, when you look back to when AJ Dillon was drafted, this is a guy that was used to carrying the football 25 or 30 times a game at Boston College and was one of those guys that wore down defenses, was better in his 21st carry than he was in his seventh carry, and that was just who he was. It was always a, let's just say, an interesting draft pick because it didn't appear to fit with the Packers offense then and still doesn't appear to fit. Square pegs and round holes, as we've talked about before, I think. And a super, super dude, by the way.
He is. You know, the lack of no running game at this point, and I understand Aaron Jones is out, but it's pretty clear that, like, if he's not our RB, there is no running game. And it handcuffs LaFleur, and it puts all the pressure on Love, and things start to go downhill. And then you see, like, weird, crafty little plays. And I'm not maybe criticizing LaFleur for, like, these weird, like, handoffs and then pass it back to the quarterback shit. Like, he's doing that because he doesn't have any other options. I mean, the receivers are getting blanketed, and he's got to find some other play in the playbook. They got to figure that out. And I understand the offensive line isn't up 100%. Jones isn't there, but man, it could be a long season if the injuries keep on stacking up like that.
Todd and I text during games, even when I'm at the game. So,
and I didn't realize that until about 20 fucking minutes into our conversation. I'm like, are you at the game? You're like, yeah. I was like, what the fuck?
I thought it was interesting. There were multiple decisions by Matt LaFleur in this game.
Yeah.
And you and I both ended up on the opposite sides. Like, I thought when they went for it on fourth down and didn't kick the field goal, I thought that's the right thing to do there. Now, that's prior to Carr getting hurt. And I said to you like, that they're going to score again. Like, if they kick a field goal here and it's 17-3 and they go down and score again, you haven't gotten anywhere. Carr got hurt like on the next series, so it didn't matter. But I agreed with the going for it. You didn't. And then when they went for two, I'm like, what in the fuck are we doing right now? Which turned out to be genius, by the way.
And I'll add the third one to that is going for it on the first series. That was another one where it's like,
Musgrave was wide open on that trick play. He was open by like 15 yards. There was not a soul in the vicinity. Love did like this, like splits on the balance or whatever he was doing.
It was ugly. But the other one, when they're down 17-0, I think it was like, there was pretty much the entire
fourth quarter.
Say there was 12 or 13 minutes. Like, just get on the board. That's a chip shot. Just take the three. Defense had at that point, Carr is out, right? Or he was out.
He wasn't out yet, I don't think. Okay. Am I wrong? I could be wrong. I thought that he was still in the game when they...
I mean, I think even irregardless of whether Carr's in that game or not, you take the three.
Anything else, Peter? Ugly, before we move on? Nope. Besides the Good. Packers giving up another punt return for a touchdown?
That was... I mean...
I was surrounded by Saints fans. They were very excited at that point. Ugh. It felt like a blowout was about to happen.
Dallin Levitt completely over-pursued that. Not to always pick on him, but I will. Anything goes wrong with special teams, it's his fault.
Even if he's not on the field.
Yes. Well, fuck him.
It's either him or Corey Bajorquez, right?
That's right.
Is never repeated inside my house.
All right, let's move on to the defense, Pierre. There's a lot of good.
Place for me to start with Rashawn Gary. Three sacks, multiple quarterback pressures, and for a guy that still isn't playing every snap, so he's still coming back from that injury, very, very impressive. That's the player, the impact player that gets to the quarterback that we've been wanting to see since the day he was drafted. It's okay having multiple quarterback pressures, and you need to have those. You also want to see guys hit the quarterback, sack the quarterback, make those plays. So, yeah. Big, big shout out for Rashawn Gary. That's really positive and doubly positive going forward.
He could have had four, five, or six.
He could, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, very easily, narrowly. And to only come up with, I mean, to say that he only came up with three is...
He only had three sacks in this game.
And on limited snaps. He wasn't in there on every defensive snap either. So, holy smokes, is that a game. Man,
there's two things that come to mind. There's a lot of things from Rashawn Gary. One, did you see in the locker room afterwards? You have to love Rashawn Gary, the person. Like, that fucker cares. He's bawling in the locker room afterwards. Like, it's like this, I'm back, right? I'm almost back. And he cares so much about the game. Remember when he was drafted? He cried then too. I love that guy. I mean, I love him as a player, but like, you just, the man is awesome too. He absolutely cares. You need guys on the team, of course, that care. but that are going to show it openly. He also changed this game. His hit on Carr, the Packers would not have won if Carr would have continued to play quarterback for the New Orleans Saints in this game. I am convinced of it, because they would have scored again, because he's a starting quarterback in the NFL, and Jameis Winston is fucking terrible. That, and I think the Packers need to look at what's happening right now with Rashawn Gary and go, I don't want him to just be a pass rush specialist, but if I cut down his snaps and I don't have him out there for 40 fucking snaps a game, he is dominating games. You have depth at that position. You need to keep cycling those guys so that when the fourth quarter comes, Rashawn Gary is not gassed and he's going to go out there and annihilate someone.
And Anagbare and Van Ness are great options. They both played solid in this game for the most part. Why not do that?
To your point, him and Van Ness, even Hollins can go out there and give you decent snaps where it's not a huge hole at that position.
Kenny Clark was good again. Yeah, I think that, I thought the defensive line was pretty good, but Kenny Clark was, again, the star on the defensive line. He appears through three games to be playing back at close to Pro Bowl level, and the Packers absolutely have to have that up front. I thought Clark, he appears, and I don't know whether this is just because he's being used more as an end rather than nose tackle. He appears to be quicker and faster this year, but it might be because he's not being tied up by double team blocking. But he appears to be more around the football and running plays down from behind and that kind of thing. Big shout out to Kenny Clark.
I have to ask you guys again, because at the game, you don't get the benefit of replay. How late was he on throwing that guy down? Because, of course, we can't hear a whistle. Felt like he was still moving forward, but maybe, no.
I think it was a penalty.
When he got the penalty?
I think it was a penalty. In today's NFL, I think if the roles had been reversed and that was a Packers offensive player being thrown down, I think you'd have said that's a penalty.
Okay.
But you raise a good point that we didn't mention on the offense. Only uglier, maybe we'll come back to it, we'll recover it now. The penalties, what were they, 10, 11, 12 penalties was, yeah, that's what held them back for huge parts of the game.
I'll take that penalty any day. Set the tone. This is our fucking house. I'll take that all day.
Did you see Mike Daniels on Twitter say that one of the reasons we didn't win more Super Bowls in my era was because we didn't have enough of that?
And he was talking about the Quay Walker stuff.
Right, but it's the same thing.
It's the same principle. Quay Walker was a little too young to be doing that stuff at that point. Doesn't really have a career under his feet. Maybe when you have a couple of years in the league and you're known as a enforcer type or whatever, you can pull that shit off. Kenny Carr can pull that shit off.
And I get that on defense, and I get that in the defensive backfield as well. So you get it from Jair Alexander and those guys challenging the receivers, and you're going to get defensive pass interference, but at least challenge those guys. The bit I struggled with, and again, this is like I was jumping back to the offense, was the full starts and stuff on offense. There were way too many of that.
11 penalties for 90.
It was all coming at the beginning of the game. I was like, oh my God, here we go again. There was so many.
The first two offensive plays, penalty.
You're asking Jordan Love and the offense to do a lot if they are constantly moving back. Again, being at the game, it's a different perspective. I did not notice Rudy Ford other than on that one play where he had to run probably about 20 yards to get back to that deep ball. I mean, he doesn't have tremendous closing speed, but that was a really nice play, and he knocked it away, and that's what needs to be done.
He had a solid game, 88.2 PFF overall grade. That's off the charts.
That's a really good game. That's better than
he played every snap. That's an incredibly high grade.
What else?
I thought the DBs were good. Yeah, Chris Olave. Who else did they have?
Michael Thomas.
Yeah, I mean,
Jimmy the Statue Graham.
Oh, that first touchdown, I about puked.
Me too. He's lucky he was in the end zone, because he would have fallen right where he caught the ball.
Rasul Douglas was all over him. It just snuck its way in there. And then he tried to do a fake Lambeau leap. Fuck you, Jimmy Graham. Fuck yourself. Overall, you figure like the DBs were without Stokes still. There's been no update there.
None.
Going into the fourth week, so we should be hearing something soon. Alexander's out.
Your two best
corners. Number ones are out. So I felt as a unit, they did what they had to do and only allowed 175 passing yards. I thought that was well done.
You know, I think this was a week where Joe Barry's defense shouldn't take the criticism it took the previous week. And it's easy to, you can pick out individual plays and you can see where they convert on 3rd and 8 or they convert on 3rd and 10 and that kind of thing. And you think, it's that defense again. The other team's guys get paid too. They're going to convert plays. as Todd just said, if you give up less than 200 yards on defense, you've probably had a damn good defensive day. And you give up 17 points or 10 points on defense, you've had a damn good defensive day. And they did. I think it's one of those weeks where maybe it didn't feel like it when the game was going on, but after the game and you take a step back and you look at the defensive performance, it was very good.
Todd's putting the notes that Quay Walker had a really poor game PFF-wise. It wasn't noticeable at the game that he was playing. Like, it wasn't like, wow, you just got burnt for a 30-yard pass or something like that. Although the flat was wide open all day long. I don't know if that was because McDuffie was out there or because Walker wasn't. I don't know what was going on. And I don't know that not having Devondre Campbell out there contributed to Quay Walker's poor score because he was trying to do too much. I guess I'm really trying to defend him, and I shouldn't because I don't really know. And we talked about it last week. The lack of depth at linebacker is fucking scary.
Yeah. He needs to be more consistent, right? I mean, he went from number one overall PFF defensive grade to he was the absolute fucking bottom, 43.6. I don't know that he made the plays that we expect him to make in this game. He just kind of had a game. He was out there, but didn't do anything of what we would expect. Made no impact plays.
Again, yeah, he didn't make any impact plays. He didn't make any glaring, again, unless those were his fault, those passes out in the flat, if those were his fault, then okay, then he really did have a problem. But I didn't see anything glaring, but that's just me. So we move on to the next game, which comes up real quickly on the schedule on Thursday. The Detroit Lions are up on Thursday. That's a home game. Interesting. The Lions kind of beat the brakes off Atlanta. I mean, it wasn't like a Packers 25-24 game. They've got some good players. We know this. Jared Goff has played well this year. Amon-Ra St. Brown is a good player. Jahmyr Gibbs, I'm a big fan of his. Sam Laporta is better than I expected. He's one of the higher-rated tight ends in all of PFF right now. And we know we can't cover the tight end, so that should be a problem. Their line is very good. Their defensive line was really good last year. I don't know, Peter.
So the offensive line is really good, but they're hurting on the offensive line. Taylor Decker is the starting left tackle, has been out, hasn't played the last two games. Sewell's been playing over there. Now, Sewell's a super player, but the backup went out injured in this
Taylor
past
Decker's
game.
Taylor Decker's backup?
Went out injured in this past game. So they're potentially down to like the fourth offensive tackle. That helps, especially if you're sending Rashan Gary and Van Ness and those guys on the pass rush. So that's you know, you hate to be encouraged by injuries, but heck, we've got them. So that may help. Whether Decker's going to be back this week is questionable. But other than that, you look at them offensively, and they can hurt you in any number of ways. Gibbs, you know, you liked Gibbs, especially at draft time. And he's one of those backs that's going to kill you with his speed, but it will also catch a lot of balls coming out of the backfield to get out into the open and do it that way. You know, Montgomery's been hurt as well, so I don't know whether he'll play. Amon-Ra St. Brown, the tight end. Dan Campbell was a tight end by himself and a tight end's coach before coming to the Lions, so he likes that position. So I think that offense really, really scares you. Now, what you hope is the Packers put up a similar defensive performance to the one that they put up this past week. The Lions' defense doesn't scare me so much. You've got Aiden Hutchinson, who's a super player, should have been the number one pick a couple of years ago. I think their defensive secondary you can pick on. We should be looking for the Packers' wide receivers to build on what they did this past week. Yeah, I think that's kind of where we are with the Lions. And one of the major differences between the two teams, Packers have turned the ball over just one time in three games. The Lions have turned it over five times.
Gardner-Johnson out too?
Out for the season, yeah. Well, yeah. He's on injured reserve. Maybe it may be out for the season. So I think there's areas that where you think, yeah, the Packers can exploit some of those areas, but that Lions offense is good.
We didn't talk about this, but the interception that Love threw was just a punt. Todd and I argued about that too.
I hate that.
It was like a good punt is all I said, but that's the only turnover they've had. They have not, knock on wood, put the ball on the ground, fumbling it. You know what I mean? Other than that, Jordan Love has thrown interceptions. Staying clean is going to be a huge key in this game. Again, I don't think we're the better football team, especially with all the injuries. We have to play clean football in order to beat that better team. I'm still not a Brian Branch guy. I know he's had some very good games. I don't see him as being elite. So, Todd, thoughts on this game versus Detroit?
I have two keys to the game. The first one you're probably not going to like. I honestly believe that Jared Goff is underrated.
I don't have any issues with that. I thought you hated him.
I thought you didn't like him.
I don't think he is a great player, but I think in this offense with this team, he is the perfect quarterback for them.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to throw it to the wrong team once in a while. He does that, but he's over game manager. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he's not just a game manager. He can make throws. And he's has enough arm strength to make most of the throws.
I would not look past him in this game. I would not look past the talent that he brings to the game and his game management skills. The next key to it is I don't think we win this game without Aaron Jones, flat out. If he doesn't play, I don't think we can squeak one out like we did against the Saints, against this Lions team. We just can't. Keep defenses honest with a legitimate running back, a number one running back. We don't stand a chance in this game. I don't care that it's at home. I don't care that we just are coming off a win. I don't care about any of that. If Aaron Jones isn't playing this game, we're going to lose.
I can't argue with that. How many times did Jordan Love throw the ball in an 18-17 game? He threw it like 45 times in this game. You can't beat good teams doing that most of the time. New Orleans isn't a good football team. They're not Lions level good. What else? Peter, anything else before we move on with our predictions?
The way the Packers have a chance in this game is they have to be perfect. And by perfect, I don't mean perfect. I mean no penalties, no turnovers. They have to get something in the running game, but they cannot turn the ball over and they can't have 11 penalties. And they can't give up touchdowns on special teams either.
Man, I know I go all over the place. Why is Anders Carlson not just smashing balls over the goalposts on kickoffs? Because he looks effortless. I think it was the first kick of the game. His first kick of the game, effortless, 6 yards deep in the end zone. Doesn't look like he's even trying. Just kick it the other 4 yards, brother. Especially in big circumstances. New Orleans kicker, kick it through the end or through the goalposts on that kick. You're not returning this kick. You're not returning it. I'm blasting this ball so you can't touch it. That's a momentum shifter that I don't get it. I don't know if he's being told that, if he can't physically get it another 3 yards. I don't know what it is.
And late in the game, they fucking kicked it to the guy who returned the punt.
And that was like, not
why the fuck are you kicking kick. It to him? That ball should be in the stands.
Yes.
No, that irritated me too. And they're going to give him a chance at this? You know he just returned a punt.
Stupid. It's Dale's turn to go first, so I don't copy everybody on the score predictions. So here we go. I would love to say that the Packers are going to win this game. I don't think they will. Todd, you're 100% right. If Aaron Jones doesn't play, there's no chance in hell that they win. I'm not sure he will, but one of the things that heard it on Twitter and I've seen it in the media, like we're saving these guys for Thursday. If they would have saved those guys for Thursday but lost to New Orleans, what have you gained? It doesn't make sense to save guys for a game. All the games are important. You need to win the games you can win, and not beating Atlanta in a game you should have won then creates, we need to win games we shouldn't have won that we don't think we're going to win. You need to win those games down the road. I fucking said that really poorly. Anyway, I think the Packers will lose this game, 27-17.
I think they lose too. I think even if Jones comes back, I don't know that unless the offensive line, they have to have a career day. The guys who are subbing in for Bakhtiari and Tom and everyone else. I think it's 23-14 Lions.
So unless the Packers run the football, don't turn the ball over, don't give up touchdowns on special teams, don't have penalties. Only if those four things happen do I think the Packers have a chance in this game. I don't think all of those four things will happen. I think the Lions, who have won the last three games against the Packers, will make that four in a row. And that won't have happened too often. And I think it's 28-17.
Okay, super positive in the average. Once again.
We're going to lose.
Well, we said they were going to lose to the Bears, too, and look how that turned out.
True.
All right, so thanks for listening to episode 134 of the Average Cheese Podcast, the Edgar Bennett episode.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.